Hello, everybody. Welcome back for another episode of Putting the Horse First. Today, Emma Jenkinson and I discuss anxiety in both horses and riders. Emma Jenkinson is a seasoned horse trainer and riding coach based in northern Mexico. She has a background in dressage and equestrian vaulting. She dedicates her expertise to utilizing positive reinforcement training and incorporating classical dressage principles. We start out our discussion by talking about her podcast, which you can find on her website, havenequine.com, or on other podcast players, in which Emma talks about horses and anxiety. So I hope you enjoy our discussion. Thanks for tuning in. I was listening to your podcast, and what piqued my curiosity was you said you wanted to talk about horses and anxiety. And that is obviously a huge topic. A couple years ago, probably more than a couple years ago, I started doing positive reinforcement training, which was really fun, tricky, especially with horses who are really enthusiastic about it. It requires a lot of discipline. But then I still ran into problems with horses when they get anxiety, when they're really upset about stuff. And I had attended the Art and Science of Animal Training Conference. They squeezed it in just before the COVID shutdown. It was like February of 2020. And there I saw constructional aggression treatment for dogs, which is a exposure. You expose the animal to a very small amount of something that makes them apprehensive, a smallest amount. And as soon as the dog looks like he's calmed down, even the tiniest bit, you remove the stimulus. And thought, oh, that was neat. I didn't think too much of it until a few years later, I saw Warwick Schiller doing a Cat H of a video. And I was like, wait a minute, I recognize that. Mm-hmm. And I had been in a sticking place with my own horse, who's meant to be a show horse. He's bred to be overreactive. So I was signed up into a course at that time and having a lot of problems with him because he's physically capable of doing the work, but mentally the guy is just so about everything that's going on in the world and so concerned about his own safety that it was just difficult to talk to him. And the positive reinforcement training just seems to run up against a wall there, at least as far as I knew at that time. So I tried the Cat H stuff, and within 2 days, my horse, he was looking at me differently. He was like, oh, you understand that I'm upset. And I was like, yes, I do. So I spent a few months, and it seemed to every day that I did it, it just progressed more and more. In his case, it was him. He was, even though we had a beautiful barn, really nice barn and a really nice indoor, but the indoor at 150 feet was too far. And he didn't like to leave the barn and go away from the other horses. He's just like really classically herd bound. So it was a very simple, straightforward, polar situation of, I know he's going to be happier when he goes in this direction and unhappier when he goes in that direction. And the Cat H seemed to work. It worked phenomenally for that. And once his anxiety went down, I was able to bring the positive reinforcement back in, because then he was in a mental state where I could communicate with him. I then very quickly after that learned that I could only make the Cat H work in that much of a polar situation where, you know, you had to have a safe place for the horse to be. And I had to be able to have some control over the stimulus that was making my horse upset. So if I take him outside and he's scared of something in that direction, scared of something in that direction, scared of something in that direction, then at that point, I can't do anything, because there's stuff going on out there that I can't control. I can't, you know, control how much pressure he's experiencing. So I was like, okay, well, so I found it very useful, but still it has its stopping point. And then I had signed up online. I'm doing a Lucinda Green cross country, a 1 month long cross country thing. And one of her first, she had her first online class the other day, and mental balance was one of her first primary things. And I was thinking about it in terms of the anxiety. And I was realizing, you know, that is when we talk about anxiety with horses, that is immediately after the anxiety with the horse, it's the human and dissecting what their anxiety is about. Is it that I'm a riding instructor and I have to give this little kid a lesson and this pony's not, you know, the pony is upset and now I have a problem? Or is it that I'm a groom and I'm walking the horse at a horse show and I really have no way out of this? You know, like I got to get the horse to the ring. I mean, they've given me a wonderful assemblage of equipment to put on the horse's head to try to get it from point A to point B. Or is it that you're just somebody who has a couple horses in their backyard
and the horse has started spooking and they tramp on your feet as they go. The anxiety in the horse is one thing, but then how we react to it and what our circumstances are kind of start to define how we're able to deal with it. It's just you and your own horse and your own place. Maybe you have a lot of options to take as much time as you want. But a lot of times, even if it's just in your own place, people have all the stories in their head about, why am I such a fool? I can't walk my horse 20 feet from the paddock to the barn. And that all comes in. So that's what I was thinking about anxiety. What were you thinking about with anxiety and with horses?
Oh my goodness, so many things. So for one thing, like an example of what you're talking about of us, depending on our situation, we don't always have control. And it really is trauma exposure therapy. I come from a psychology background and it's all about environment. It really is. So it's a question of how do we control the environment or do the best we can in every little situation. But as people, I think a lot of times the social aspect comes in, and for instance, me giving lessons, like you were saying, sometimes I'm like, oh, the pony's not listening and this and that, but I struggle to just be a trainer first and foremost and control my energy. And I think that's the first step. And then we come up with a plan and we see how we can make the environment a little better, or even this next 5 seconds a little better. So there's so many different things you can do in those moments. I love Warwick Schiller's talks about energy. And I think it gives us a chance to bring our energy down too. And then we just need to learn a ton of horse behavior so we can understand when the nervous system's coming up and down throughout a session. Because even if we use treats, we're going to have to give them pause and time to go up and down. And I think our goal ultimately is to get the horse's nervous system not to never dysregulate, but to regulate more often and come back down more quickly.
I spend too much time online in general. There's a lot of riding instructors. These people are younger, giving riding lessons and dealing with disappointment that clients have when horses don't do what you want them to do. I would love to be able to get help people like that, who are often the bread and butter of the industry. All these lesson barns where all these people get their start in a variety of different disciplines. And these often under 30-year-old people being burdened with a lot of responsibility to get the horse to do it, get the client to do it, get the goal done so everybody's happy and the whole thing can keep clicking on. Because if you don't make the clients happy, they don't come back. Increasingly, people are starting to pay attention to the fact that school horses being terribly unhappy is not helping us in the long run.
First-hand experience.
No, it can be very hard to change that, especially if you're working at a facility of any size where people have been doing stuff a certain way for a long time. You know, they're not interested in any fluffy duffy new age snowflake track system clicker training. You know, just like, they don't want to go there. They know what's been working for the past 30, 40, 50 years, and they would very much like to please go back to that. And it seems to me that the expectations for your average 20-something riding instructor to deal with the anxiety of the students, the expectation that these people who probably do not have a degree in psychology, people are really comfortable leaning on your basic riding school beginner instructor and forcing that person, you know, leaning into that person and saying, well, you have to make it happen. You have to make my kid happy. All the other kids are cantering. Why is it my kid cantering? Why does my kid have to keep riding this pony that she doesn't like? Why can't my kid jump higher than 2 foot?
I think about that a lot too. And I am one of those people. What I've seen is that at least we found these groups where our older peers are.
Yeah.
And they are telling us, oh no, drop them. Don't put up with that. For a lot of reasons. And a lot of us have had the goal to just put our horses first, but it's made me have half the clients that I would like to keep my horse happy. And it's made me be a psychologist as well. It's made me be a mediator between parents and children. And it's made me not really enjoy teaching children, because I don't always know if they're there because they want to be. But hopefully, you know, I would love it if everybody had a mentor. I think that would be an amazing step. And then I think that if a lot of beginner programs would go to holding a higher standard, perhaps charging at the top of their area's price range and making it a privilege to come and be a beginner and learn, because it should be a privilege. And I think horsemanship programs are going to be amazing. Something I'm trying out this year is anyone who wants to come on for riding next year is going to have to take a 6-month horsemanship course.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. So they're going to come and, you know, I'm full. So if I add students next year, they're going to need to know everything on the ground that they possibly could, because it helps me maintain my school horses training. It keeps everybody safe. Mm-hmm. And it's all the things that they skip and are in trouble with when you're talking about this one quirk or that thing when they go buy a horse. And I see that being very popular. And almost all of my clients are thinking about getting a horse in the next few years. You know, they really need an education. So it's a tough spot to be in. I think having somebody to just ask, is this okay? Should I put up with this? Is this normal? Is just the biggest relief.
Let me bring it back to anxiety with the horses. So have you used the Cat H much, or have you found something else? Do you have any other specific techniques in terms of anxiety with horses that you use?
I hadn't done anything but beyond like see Warwickshire in passing. And so what's described to me sounds like what I do, but I'm not sure if it's the same thing. I use positive reinforcement absolutely in most cases. Then I have to take pause and just, I think we need to bring in the same energy aspect of figuring out the horse's behaviors and giving them a chance to say, go up to freeze and then come back down to baseline. Yeah. And then we continue our task. You know, there's a lot of that, but I think most of it that I've experienced, like real behavioral change with really traumatized or shut down horses, is giving them time off and the right environment and taking care of their health problems. A lot of times they just come around and then you can start. And so what I don't see is people giving horses enough time.
My current property, I'm finding a little tricky because I've kind of got stuff in all four directions that potentially might light some horses up. The one horse that gets the most lit is on stall rest still. She's recovering from a suspensory injury. So she's not quite on, I mean, she's tack walking under tack, but she's in a limited turnout spot. You know, she goes out in a medical paddock. She goes from the stall to the medical paddock, and then we walk her under saddle somewhere between 30 and 60 minutes a day. So I'm looking at that horse and I'm thinking, I'm like, what are we going to do with this horse?
And where's her pen and who's near her?
The horses right now are all together. So she's one boy is right next to her and the other two boys are right next to her. So they're all kind of gaggled in a bunch. She's the only mare that we've got, which is kind of a thing because I really don't think we can put her out in the same place with all three geldings eventually. And she is one of the ones that gets lit when she sees something on the perimeter that she's concerned about. Last night, one of her riders was just finishing up walking her around. And just as she was about to hop off, some people came walking down the trail and the horse went completely I mean, she didn't jump around much because the rider is skilled, but the horse was as upset as a horse can be, like completely locked and frozen and staring and unable to move her feet. Meanwhile, I'm walking the other horses right past her. You know, there's other horses who like don't care, but she's
she sounds like one of the more confident horses in the bunch to be looking at everything, you know, making sure everything's good. I would see about what enrichment you can add and how often you can do some little sessions with her to keep her mind active. You know, we can't control everything. We can just do our best. I've had a lot of success putting wild Mustangs. They're never all together because I never know what's going on. A lot of the Mustangs have been beat up by each other because they've been put together in such small quarters. Yeah. So they don't like other horses sometimes.
Oh, really? Okay.
They can be quite afraid of other horses because they've been, their herds have been split up and then they've been thrown in pens.
Oh, gotcha.
And so some horses are going to resource guard. And so I've noticed when I first got my gelding, he wouldn't drink out of the water tank with another horse. And that makes me think that he might have been chased off. And I have had a few Mustangs that were actually afraid of the other horses at first. But once they quarantine, I try to put them in between my other horses, like right in the middle. And they're kind of protected on both sides. And I have the same thing where there's roads on all sides of us that are pretty busy and loud and stuff. I just try to keep their friends close and keep in mind when I'm taking herd members away that they might be extra stressed. And something I love to do is throw out Timothy pellets. If you don't have a lot of sand and your horse has teeth, I will throw out Timothy pellets, like sprinkled or in a pan. Just so they can kind of graze and move around. And I put, you know, their water on one side and their, if I can do like slow feed nets all around, I try to do that to keep them moving and grazing. And that seems to help a lot with anxiety when they first arrive or they're on stall rest. I wish there was like a step-by-step magical solution.
That would be nice if there was.
That's what we want.
Do you bring Mustangs in and rehome them on a regular basis? Or is this just a couple that you've gotten in?
So my two lesson horses are Mustangs, and I've had a few Pueblo horses come in over the years. I had to stop for a few years because of my health. And my hope is that when we open our horsemanship program, we'll probably take one or two a year and let the horsemanship students like witness actually taming a Mustang.
So do you have 6-foot high fences?
The BLM standard is if they're yearlings, they can be in 5-foot and otherwise it's 6. Okay. I usually do treated wood posts 6-foot tall with that welded hard horse wire, not the soft stuff. It doesn't work. And you have to do a top rail at 6 feet is what I do. A lot of people use panels. I love it. They can tear up panels though and hurt themselves. And I don't have my arena fenced off well enough yet. And to get the whole property fenced off like that would be a lot.
If I could ask you a question about anxiety and students. I've been into the rider mechanics for a couple decades now. And early on when I started working with Mary Wanless, I noticed pretty quickly that when I got my body better organized on the back of the horse, any fears would go away. Like I would have days and I would hop on, I'd be like, geez, this horse is jumping around and I just don't care. And then other days I would get on, I'd be like, I really care. And then it kind of clicked. I was like, oh, wow. So on the days when I can really get my seat organized well, then, you know, it really helps with how upset you are about what the horse may be doing that you don't want them to be doing. Then again, I find mechanics to be a really tricky sell for lesson students. What do you do for horses? I mean, I'm sure riders have anxiety for a bunch of different reasons, but what kind of techniques and what stuff do you do when you're dealing with like lesson students or anybody who you're teaching who's having fear issues with their riding?
First of all, we just take a moment and I get them breathing again. With a student that's scared, we just try to see if we can get grounded and then we can get our heart rate down. And if we cannot, they're going to have to get off for a minute. And sometimes I'll have them shake it out or do some stretches. It depends on the age level, usually. Like kids, if you can get them to laugh and be silly and like shake it out or do some, you can kind of distract their nervous system and get them to calm down. But adults, we like to really think about it and we don't want to look silly and we want to get back up there, get them to do walking lunges, things we would do for warm-ups and vaulting. And then I try to distract them as well, give them some information about warming up for riding, say. And then we'll step back up on the mounting block and we'll just see if we feel okay here. And then we'll get back on and continue what we're doing. And I honestly do the same if my lesson horse gets dysregulated. My lesson horse is allowed to freeze and take a moment and I'll see if she starts breathing again and I'll keep my student up there. We'll see if their nervous system comes back down. And in that time, I'm teaching the student about it. And then we continue on with our task and see, that is a really important piece. I think with working horses through trauma is knowing where their nervous system's about to hit the end or dysregulated, but staying with them in that moment is the important part. Like, that is where they're a little bit uncomfortable, and that's where we get the progress.
So what do you have a standard, you know, a lot of riding instructors will have a problem that their student, say they're really afraid to canter. Like, this horse canters for every other person that you put on it. And then you get that one person who, for some reason, just the whole idea of canter really scares them. And they will, they're not aware of it, but just by virtue of the way that they are so afraid and tense, they will prevent the horse from cantering because they really don't want, they think they want to, but then they're really scared and they actually wind up getting in the horse's way. How do you deal with that kind of situation?
I let them know that until they are not clenching up and, you know, I explain the mechanics to them. I tell them your horse can't move under you like that until you are able to relax. So we're going to keep working on trot, and maybe I can give you some tools to feel more comfortable in the canter, such as a really strong 2-point so that transition into canter is not so jarring. But it really just depends on what kind of accident or fear it is. Like, if it was an accident, I would definitely focus on just teaching them everything they could possibly need to know to be safe on the horse's back, to emergency dismount, all these things. And then a lot of times it's just getting them to admit they're scared in the first place. So throughout a lesson, I'm usually just focused on like, hey, let's stop. Let's take your feet out of the stirrups, reset, take a breath. Can you imagine roots going down the bottom of your feet all the way to the ground? And I explain it more as getting your seat sorted out. It is a grounding technique and we need to breathe. So a lot of times, you know, it's like, don't be afraid to put them back on a lunge line. Don't be afraid to go back to trot and get things stronger at any point. You could show up one day and your horse might not be at the same training level they're at. And my students have to put up with that as well. And so I'll be like, oh, great. So the horse isn't in it today. So we're going to work on something else. And another big thing is to ask students to start thinking through these things themselves. If they're scared, I'll be like, okay, let's figure out exactly what you're scared of. And then what are some ways you think we can make you feel safer up there? And then I'll give them some options. Like, should we get you stable enough to trot without stirrup? Or should we make sure that you can go over some poles and steer? What do you think is the issue here? And it's the same as helping them find feel and feelings. And a lot of times too, if we do like a feel lesson, I'm going to put you back on the lunge line and we're going to walk, close your eyes and just tell me when the left back leg leaves the ground, or tell me when your seat bone hits. These things, it really gets you to calm down and focus and you don't fear. And it's the same. It's control the environment so they don't have too many things they have to focus on.
Gotcha. You know, I don't think I have you said something I don't think I've ever heard anybody say in a discussion about riding instruction, which is ask the student what they think they need to do. What a great idea. So that brings me to that the other thought I was having about the piece of anxiety that's about, I want to say embarrassment, but embarrassment is not quite the right word. It's really more about the frustration we have that we're not, it's harder than we want it to be. We're not as good as we want to be. People feel self-conscious about having to, quote unquote, work on basic or simple things, or self-conscious about they still can't do X after. People have a weird accounting of time. They've been taking riding lessons once a week for a year and say they didn't come on holidays, they went on vacation. So maybe over the year they've taken 40 lessons. So maybe they've got 40 hours of practice, but in their brain, they're thinking, I've been riding for a year. They have 40 hours of practice in a year. We're also focused on performance. You know, we feel like we should do better. It should be, there's something wrong with me because I'm struggling so much. So how do you address that with students?
I try to direct some compassion toward their horse first and then themselves. So I think as equestrians, we're really tough and we're really hard on ourselves. So it's a lot easier to be nice to a horse. So I usually start with that first, especially with people riding my horse. I explain how the horse is feeling and I'll ask them, what do you think this horse is goals are today? What do you think their experiences right now? What do you think they would enjoy? Because we're here to enjoy horses and they have their own feelings, and we have to meet them exactly where they're at today. And then I might ask them if they can meet themselves where they're at today.
Oh, you're good. That's great stuff.
And one last thing, I don't do this with everyone because some people do not like the woo-woo, but it's called a Ho'oponopono. It's a Hawaiian meditation and practice. It's just about self-forgiveness and compassion and forgiving others. And it goes, I love you, thank you, I forgive you, and I'm sorry. If you say it to yourself, sometimes you'll cry, things will come up. People end up wanting to tap that EFT tapping. So if there's something they're being mean to themselves about that day, like these expectations, it's a really good way to let go of that and try to come back down to the moment.
Yeah.
And our horses are a really good reminder of that, right?
They are. Yes. All right. That's excellent stuff. That's a great answer. You're good at this stuff.
Well, thank you.
All right. So I should let you go. Is there anything else you wanted to chat about?
I just have a new podcast coming out this week. So check out Horsemanship Haven podcast. I'm doing a very full length episode on working horses through anxiety. And I talk about a specific horse and everything we've done. So I think it is really helpful. And then I have started offering positive reinforcement behavioral consults virtually. So I'm always available for that at a reasonable price. And if I can't help someone, I will direct them to a licensed professional. And my website's havenequine.com and all my stuff's there.
All right, everybody, that's it for my conversation with Emma Jacobson of Haven Equine. Emma and I enjoyed our little chat so much that we have decided to launch a new podcast. So this is a little teaser for our new podcast, which will be titled something like Equestrian Tea Time. And we will be dishing about everything in the horse industry. The good, the bad, and the ugly, and all of our complaints. We are going to start by talking to people about their internship/working student horror stories. If you have an experience that you would like to talk to us about at an equine working student or internship position, you can reach out to Emma on her website, Haven Equine, or you can shoot me an email at puttingthehorsefirst, that's first, a number one, ST, puttingthehorsefirst@gmail.com. So I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.